Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hey, it's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another edition of our weekly podcast. You know, this week, what I thought we would talk about is lending, because I know many of you who listen in on this are dealing with lenders because you're out there buying real estate. We have to. It's part of the game. I mean, why use your own money? We can use someone else's money to put the deal together. And so when we get into borrowing money to put our deals together, there are several different types of loans that are available to us. Of course, we have the conventional loans, we have the portfolio loans, we have commercial loans. But a lot of people now who are flipping property are looking at those hard money loans because those lenders really fit that need for the person that wants to come in and rehab a project because they know it's going to be of a short duration. But the problem, I mean, this is what we've been seeing. I've noticed that with a lot of real estate flippers is that you're getting into these loans and you think you're going to be out of it within 60 days or 90 days, and you can't because maybe the property doesn't sell right away, but that's typically not the issue. It's the contractors. You know, if you're listening to what I'm talking about there, that if you've been flipping properties or even if you're rehabbing existing properties that you intend to turn into a rental, that there's a shortage of tradesmen out there to come out and work on our properties. And many times, or not many times, but unfortunately, sometimes we get people, they're just shysters. That is, they're going to come out, they're going to sell you a bill of goods, and before they get started, they need money up front. And next thing you know, you're behind on the project. The work has not progressed that they billed you for, and now you're scrambling to find someone else. The issues then become you still have this hard money loan hanging over your shoulder, looking, asking for money, and you know you've got to get that project completion before the interest rate hikes on you or it just eats up all your profit. So what I'd like to do today is I'm going to bring on a good friend of mine, Albert Bowie. He's a mortgage specialist. And whenever I'm dealing with someone who has problems in this area, I refer them over to Albert. And I've been doing this for several years because he's a real estate investor himself. So he understands the position the client is in, but he also understands the products. So with that, Albert, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Clint. Appreciate you having me on today.
No, thanks for coming on. I mean, this has got to be an important topic. I mean, right before the show, we were chatting a little bit about what you've seen, what's going on in the market right now. And so before we get into the meat of this moving out of hard money loans and the issues surrounding that, why don't you just share with everyone what you're seeing right now?
Right now, I've been, you know, getting a lot of calls from all the lenders because, as you know, Avenue One Capital, where we operate as a broker, so we can place the loan anywhere where it makes the most sense for the client. And I've been getting an inordinate amount of calls from all the medium type money. And I refer to medium money as anything between full doc, where we're in the 3% and 4% rate ranges, from there all the way up to about 7%. So there's products in between that are stated. Sometimes we call them in the past as subprime, but they aren't exactly because they have options for people with great credit and alternative means to document income. For instance, folks who have bank statements and they don't have any taxable income on their tax returns. So I get a lot of calls from those folks. And, you know, it's interesting this time in the market.
Oh, totally. I mean, that is a concern. I mean, one of the strategies that I teach is to, you know, bump up your W-2 income through a C corporation, get yourself on payroll so you can look better to those traditional lenders. But there are people who that just doesn't work. And, you know, they're typically real estate investors. They have a lot of real estate. Mm-hmm. They don't show a lot of taxable income because of the, you know, they're doing cost seg to bump up their depreciation. And so that makes it really difficult for them. So what I'm hearing from you is that those people then are moving into this intermediate range type of product. And what is that product called? You know, if somebody's looking for that,
there's a wide variety. Some of them will come in different flavors. So for instance, one will be 12 and 24 month bank statement programs. And the lender basically underwrites it the same as a full doc loan, except for they don't use actual income. They'll just take your deposits going into your bank statements. So for instance, if you get 200,000 deposits annually, they will haircut that by 50%. So they give you 100,000 net income. So it's in a way, it's alternative doc. They're just taking a stated amount that's coming in. So you have to show them 12 months of bank statements, and we look at all the deposits, and they count anything that comes in, even cash, even Venmo, even any receipts in your business account, 50%. And that's how we calculate our income. So it's kind of like you received a W-2 of 100 grand, similar, but the pricing's higher. We're in the 5.5 to the lower sixes on that bank statement program, as an example.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, with a lot of times when you're dealing with lenders, they like to trace funds. So what happens if I have an out-of-state property manager and they don't give me the money every month? Maybe it's every other month. And and then every once in a while, I get a big chunk of money that hits my account from a distribution from another business entity that I have. Mm-hmm. Does this create problems? I mean, do the lenders look at that and say, all right, well, you know, you get money. Well, I guess you'd have a pattern every other month from your property manager, and it's going to range depending on your CapEx. But that comes in, and then they see a big hit for 60K because you took a distribution out of an LLC that's not flowing down. Is that going to throw them off? They're going to look at that and say, you know, drugs?
You know, I'm used to it. So when I review people's files and do a pre-approval, I will proactively ask, where did that money come from? You know, what's the story behind it? Because I already anticipate them asking. Underwriters will ask for deposits, typically for anything that's more than half of your monthly income. So if your monthly income, let's say, is 10 grand, any deposit over five, they're going to ask. So sometimes people will have deposits come in $4,999, you know, for instance, whatever half of their income is. So if they come to me in advance, I will plan that ahead. You know, so if I review a profit and loss, and let's say we're on track for 200 grand this year, then I know that every month that person is making $16,666. So half of that is 8,300-ish. So I would tell them, hey, you know, make sure all your deposits are under that if you can, you know, just so we don't have any headaches through the loan process. You're still bringing your money over. You're just doing more distributions in smaller fragments. So that way they can keep operating their business. You know, we don't want them to be at a standstill or anything.
Okay.
So.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
So this product exists out there for people. Now, on the hard money side, you know, for someone that's looking to get that, there's a difference there in different hard money lenders, you know, as far as the interest rates are offering. I mean, some people told me they're in at 14%. And I've heard other people can get in at 8%. Maybe you could speak to that so people know what is available to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what I've found is there are pros and cons to all of them, even the ones at higher rates. However, what I've found also is the ones in the single digits, they will be very close to full doc. I almost call it medium money because they will often require exterior appraisals, maybe sometimes full interior and exterior. They will require soft credit checks sometimes. Some of them don't. The ones that don't require the least amount and have the least conditions usually are higher rates. And the ones that offer better rates generally will have more restrictions, or they'll require the property maybe cash flow with market rent. There are many requirements for the cheaper money. But if you have the time to do it and you don't need a quick closing, then you can go with one of those outfits. The local outfits I've found have higher pricing, but it's a very fast closing. I can get some of the local outfit companies to have the wire over in 5 days. And I'm already working with them sometimes to pay them off so that we're all in sync.
Wow.
So,
So some of these are on experience as well, right? That look at the investor.
Okay. Yeah. And what I've been told, because I haven't used the experience-based product yet, but the experience-based product is based on how many exits out of hard money. So you don't necessarily have to sell the property. You just have to refi out of it or sell it. Exiting out of the hard money gives them comfort to give you a better rate. And
oh, wow. So what they're looking for then, that makes a lot of sense. I often wonder how they determine that. They're looking to see if you're paying the loans off. And the more loans you're paying off, they don't care how they're getting paid off, then the more comfortable they are with you as a developer. You know, it's flipping property. Oh, yes, that's a great nugget. Yeah, I did not realize that. I'm going to work that into my 3-day events. Great. So, you know, we were talking about the hard money lenders. And so what I see happening now with this market, because of what we originally began on with people that are into these properties on a hard money loan, it's either going to reset at a higher rate, or they've just been in it too long. And there are problems now with the contractor, and they're just getting killed with the interest, you know, or the property's being sitting there and they're trying to sell it. What do you do in that situation? I mean, there's gotta be some solution, right?
I mean, it depends. And if they come to me at the last minute, there aren't as many options at the last minute because we haven't planned the returns. We haven't planned income or deposits usually, because if they come to me last minute, we don't have time to plan. So I have to do the best I can with what I have. But for the folks that do plan in advance, it's a well-oiled machine at that point, because we've already, at least I have already created plan A, B, and C to get out of that hard money in advance, whether it's sell, refi and rent, lease option, so we'll discuss it and then I'll refer it to their attorney to, you know, prepare the mindset of putting it into that option and just in case. And those are the exit options I try to give the people. So it involves many other parties. I'm usually working with accountants and attorneys like yourself, Clint, and it's a very interesting game, much different than purchase and refi with realtors, that market, which is the main market that usually lenders work with.
Okay. So there's something you said there about coming and planning early. I mean, imagine that, right? We don't wait till the last minute, that we're not going to be procrastinators. So I want to focus on one aspect of what you just said. Let's assume that I'm doing a flip deal. Maybe I just got started. It's my very first flip and I'm running into those problems with the contractors because they just don't have the experience as well. Maybe that's holding me back. And, you know, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to sell this. I see that maybe the market's gotten a little soft, but I realize that if I don't get out of this HML at 14%, I'm not going to make any money. Yeah, I might lose money. So if I'm in that, I'm that person and I'm already, let's talk about it this way. I've been into the project now for 90 days. What do I do? And then let's contrast that to someone who is going out and doing their first deal. What should they be doing with you? So let's take both of those if we could.
Yeah. So what I do is, it's very cliche in the industry, for the lending industry at least. A lot of folks will call it the pre-approval. But pre-approval is a bad stigma because it assumes that somebody's trying to buy something. So what I call it is a purchasing power analysis. And in essentially, it's a max pre-approval. I'm trying to figure out the max purchasing power of any given borrower. And then just whatever their situation is today. And then I ask them questions, you know, because it's a part of the planning process. Like, how much income do you expect to make? What sources are they making it from? Because all these actions they're taking during the year change their pre-approval constantly. Even buying a cup of coffee on your credit card changes your debt to income, you know, as a joke. I mean, buying a couch changes your debt to income. So I try to help them plan the debt to income side so that they'll always be able to qualify, so that they have that ability to take out a hard money loan way in advance. And even with hypotheticals. So they'll ask me, for instance, if I buy this rental, how will that affect my buying power? And I tell them, hey, if you buy cash flowing properties, that improves your qualifying capability. I mean, assuming it cash flows on paper with all depreciation added back, of course. So those are the things we talk about. And everyone has unique scenarios. I have regular W-2 salary people with a couple of rentals, all the way up to people who live purely from their stock portfolio and rentals, to people who only live on notes, to installment income, royalties. I'm not just working with salaried folks, which is the easiest type of loan, of course, but that's what I deal with day to day.
All right. So here I am. I'm 3 months into this deal and I realize I need to get out. I call you up. What you're going to ask me for W-2s?
If you have them. Yeah.
If I have them. All right. Let's see if I have them. And what else am I going to need? I mean, I assume you're going to look at the property. It's not fully rehabbed yet. That's going to go into the analysis, right? To take out that first position.
Yeah. If the property isn't currently leased, then we have to hit you for the full payment, tax, insurance, and the proposed mortgage, pay off your hard money, whatever the conventional loan you're using is. Mm-hmm. And you have to qualify that with your own income if you have no tenants. Now, if you do have a tenant, we get to use a portion of that rent to offset the mortgage. It's easier to qualify that way because you get less of your own personal income needed to qualify. So we plan.
Okay, let's stop right there. When you say tenant, so I'm rehabbing a property. I'm not going to have a tenant in there while I'm rehabbing. Oh,
true.
What happens if I decide to enter into a lease arrangement with my corporation? Mm-hmm.
then we'll look at the, then you have to, your corporation will have to be in existence for 2+ years to use that lease. You could do that, okay. But the income backing it has to be substantiated, which means 2 years. So at that point.
So if the corporation's been in existence for 2 years, then you would count that income.
Yes. Most lenders would.
Oh, they don't have to look at the corporate P&L sheet or will
they? Well, they will. They'll ask you for, if you haven't filed, you know, they'll ask you for a P&L till year to date.
Yep. So
that would be, you know, August 6, 2019. And then they'll ask you for 18 and 17 returns. Oftentimes, if we're talking about conventional financing, you might be able to get away with 1 year. If you get 1 year tax return findings, because you know most lenders will run this through Fannie or Freddie's automated system, and it'll tell us if we can do 1 year or 2 years. And there's a variety of factors that affect that decision, and we can tweak it to get the desired decision. But if it says 1 year, that means you could technically show just 1 year and use that lease. A lot of the short-term Airbnb people use that model where they have the Airbnb company operate the corporation, and then the assets are held by an LLC and they rent to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I have that a lot happening with lately.
Yeah. So in that scenario though, I mean, if let's say I had a person in there, the lender's not going to ask the tenant for tax returns to verify how much money they're making. So why would it be the corporation? Why are they going to ask for that?
Because it's an interested party. And you own all the shares, right?
Are we assuming that you?
Well, they'll look on Secretary of State and they'll see the officers or
all right. But if it doesn't, that information does not show up there.
Oh, then they won't ask. Then it's just the lease agreement.
Oh, so
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's part of the strategies. Yeah, the way we set them up is that we're a proponent of anonymity, and so I'm telling people, hey, do not have your information listed on the Secretary of State's website because people are going to look. So if they look and they don't see that, they assume it's an independent third party.
That's right.
That could help. All right.
Yeah. You just have to do the pros and cons, because if you don't have your name on there and you don't get any income from it, you also don't have any income. But if you do get income, we're going to ask you, how are you affiliated with that company that gets income? Are you employed? Do you own shares? And you might have to go deeper on that. But if you have income elsewhere and you already qualify and your name's not on the company and that company signs a lease to rent from your property, then all we need is the lease and the security deposit.
Yeah.
Right.
But if your name's on both sides of the lease, that kind of gives it away.
Yeah, that gives it away. You might as well just invite them in.
You want to make sure that you have someone else signing that lease then. That's a member of that company. It's not related to.
Right.
All right. So those are the things then that you look at. You talked about the rental income, but again, a lot of the people do not have rental income, and it's just they've got the property. It's not even fully rehabbed yet, and they have to get rid of that loan. So as long as they can show that they have income outside of the property to qualify, so it becomes then an income-based loan.
Right.
To move out. All right. So the guy in the
That's a part of the planning process, is to make sure they have backup sources of income to meet, you know, if they tell me they're doing so many flips a year, then we try to plan how many they actually turn per month to get an idea of what kind of qualifying situation income-wise they're going to need to be in this year or next when they file. And, you know, that's the fun in it for me, because it takes a science of lending to an art at that point. So it's always interesting.
All right. So going back to the guy that's just getting started, if I'm doing my first flip and I get that HML so I can secure the property, because I'm going to do a 30-day close or even shorter, and I've already have this lined up. I secure it. Boom. I've got it. Now, I should contact someone like you, and we should then begin planning to get myself out of that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that would be a good time. I mean, ideally before, but I know most people, they usually don't do it until they've made up the decision to even buy a flip. Then they start to looking at all options. They start looking,
All right. And then with the loans, I take it there's no prepayment penalty?
On conventional loans, there aren't. Some of that medium money we talked about earlier, that segment between probably in the lower fives up to about 7, some of those do have prepayment, 1 to 3 years. You can take a higher rate and absorb that prepayment. If you, if you know you're not going to be in it for a long time, it sometimes is a more financially beneficial scenario to take a little bit higher rate and have the flexibility to get in and out, weave in and out when you want.
Well, yeah, because if I'm a flipper, I'm not going to be in it for 3 years. I plan to be in it, except for 3 months, but a lot of times you're in it for 6 months. So
you're
trying to get away from that hard money for that long a period of time. So when they're doing that. All right. So that makes sense. So there's options out there, lending products that if I have a hard money loan, you know, so many people feel trapped by it, and they don't have to be if they just start up a conversation with someone like yourself and see what your options are. I know a lot of times this does come up. When people get started, they may have attended a few workshops and they've run up some credit card debt. Mm-hmm. How much of an impact would that have? Because with the hard money lenders, they don't seem to really care because it's an asset-based loan. So when I'm moving out of that hard money loan into one of these other products, is that going to hurt me too bad?
Yeah, the utilization on your card or the percentage you spend versus the limit per card, not the total of all your cards, affects your credit score. So that question becomes or involves mainly the credit aspect of a conventional loan, because you know we look at all three legs of the stool. We're looking at credit, income, and assets or cash. Most hard money lenders are only asset-based. They're looking at the value of the property and how much liquidity you have to pay for the rehab and the carry interest costs till the time you exit. That's all they care about generally. You know, so for us, we care about everything, income, assets, and credit. So what you mentioned with the credit cards is, yeah, if you use up your cards, you know, at Lowe's or Home Depot and you're maxing those things out, your FICOs might drop 80 to 100 points in the short term. So we want to plan that ahead of time because we want to maintain all credit, income, and assets so that you have your option to refinance out of there or sell the property. So you're comfortable at night sleeping because you got two ways of getting out of this thing. You know, that's what I would say about it.
Well, are any of these products asset-based only, or are they all income-based?
For the prime money, A paper, like conventional? Or?
Well, no, I'm not going to do conventional because that's not going to happen. I want to, I'm looking for that product where I'm no longer paying 14%, but maybe I'm down around 8%.
They will still require credit. There are some with no credit, but they'll be very low loan to value. They might be 60 to 70%, but no, you know, no scores or no income.
Got it.
So that is an advantage. You can halve your rate from 14 or 12 down to 6 or 7. And that would be an option. So that there's another option now to get out. If you don't have full docs and you didn't plan in advance, there is an option, plan B for you. This is one of those. So
yeah, because I've seen a lot of people when they're getting started, they'll do maybe a 90-70 loan. Mm-hmm. So 90% on the purchase and 70% on the rehab of the property. And then they're trying to get out of that.
That's very popular lately. Yeah, I've seen 90-75, 90-70s. Yeah.
Got it.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
All right. Well, what else would you want to share with the listeners about the current market that you think would be important for them?
Well, I've noticed, I mean, mainly in Seattle area, is that the heated market in Seattle has been rushing south. So it's been interesting to see how it's still on fire in the south end. And Puget Sound, Pierce, Thurston, and South King, it's on fire right now, but it's moving more and more out of central core Seattle. So I think that's been interesting. In terms of lending, I always want to stress, of course, the planning aspects of it. And it's good to have a lender who's on page with you with your investing objectives to figure out what your investor MO is, because everyone's a little different on how they like to approach it. And, you know, on my end, I'm flexible with how everyone approaches. So that's what I would like to impart.
You know, we have listeners from all over the country, not just Washington State. Now, are you able to work with them if they're, say, in Florida? Or
right now, I'm licensed in, of course, Washington, California, Oregon, Texas, and Colorado. So I'm working on Idaho right now.
Okay.
So we'll be in that Coeur d'Alene, the Boise, Moscow, Idaho, and Nampa and Meridian soon, but not right now. So I'm expecting that in about a month.
And, all right. So those listeners then that are on the podcast right now, they can't necessarily use you for this. What tips would you provide them or tell them if they're going to look for someone with your skill set in their area? Is there like a question they should go through with the broker to make sure they truly understand the products and what they're working with?
I think from my point of view, because I use lenders too, sometimes I'm not licensed and I need a loan. Mm-hmm. So I will generally ask some questions about qualification. I'll say, if I did this, how would that affect my ability to qualify? And, you know, if I bought a car, for instance, if I bought this rental with these numbers, if they're even going to take the time to walk me through it. So that service, that level of service is what you really need. If you're looking for this type of lender, is are they going to take the time to walk you through and explain to you how that will work and how it affects your decision or not? Some lenders I've noticed, they just put paper to pencil and they just fly through and they don't really take the time to explain anything. So you get no planning aspects. You're basically going to be transactional. You're going to apply and pray that at the time you applied, you're going to qualify for what you need. And that's pretty risky. For some people, it works when you have really high W-2 incomes. So you can make a lot of mistakes when you have high incomes. So, but if your income is tight, you know, you're making 50 to or 100 or less, it's tough because your debt to income will generally be an issue a lot of times. And, you know, unless you're in the middle of the country and you're buying $50,000 single families.
So, well, what about, so what I'm thinking is if I was going to go out there and I'm going to start calling up brokers, I'm sure they're going to say, oh yeah, we can work with you. But
right.
You know what's going to happen. I start working with them and they're going to pull my credit and then they're going to send it to underwriting. And the underwriter is going to kick it back. So, you know, we can't do this deal. And I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, because you wasted your time, right?
Exactly. So would you recommend, hey, ask them these three questions right up front. You're going to get a sense whether or not they understand your mindset because that's in where you're coming from. And they're not that's a paper pusher.
Yeah. First, I mean, obviously the simple question is, have you ever worked with the real estate investors and what kind of real estate investors? Not just people who buy one single family rental and they're an accidental landlord. That's not a real estate investor. I mean, you start as that, right? But but we're talking people who have portfolios, you're managing their portfolios. You know, tell me an instance where you've helped an investor out with hard money or private money. And maybe you might want to even use HML or PML to see if they understand what that is, because that's an indicator that they understand real estate investors because they're on Bigger Pockets or other investing websites, reading and understanding. Because I have to spend an inordinate amount of time into investor IQ. I'm always reading about real estate investment because I invest as well. So I'm using hard money, private money. I'm always looking at it, figuring out how I can use the loan product to help the investor or myself, because I'm thinking these strategies I've used were strategies I've thought about myself, like how to use FHA 203K rehab loans. How do I buy a fourplex and rehab it and maybe live in there for the minimum 12 months as agreed and then move out, for instance, do a house hack, as we like to call it. So those ideas about lending, that's the type of conversation the lender should be talking about if you're looking for a lender who is going to be a long-term asset to your real estate investing business.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's right on. When you said the HML or the PML, said you understand those terms, and if they say yes, and the follow-up question should be, what do they mean to you? Right. Just don't take the word yes, because they could be snowing you on this and say, define it.
Right.
And then you'll get a true sense. So that's a good way to test them out. Because I always tell people, you know, when you're dealing with a professional too, be it an attorney or a CPA, that one of the questions you should ask is, you know, how many real estate investors do you work with? Are you a real estate investor? So what type of investors do you work with and what type of properties do you buy? So then you get a sense of whether or not they understand you. And what you talked about, that terminology, that's key. Because if you're not an investor, you're not going to understand what a PML or an HM is in the lending space. Wow, you know, you just threw out something there about this fourplex and an FHA loan on that.
Right.
It sounds, I mean, there's so many products out there. How does someone, an investor, go about determining or finding out about these types of products? Because it could change what I'm looking for. If I knew I could get special financing for the FHA to do a fourplex as long as I live there for a year, so to say, I mean, I might be looking for a fourplex now rather than a single family.
Yeah. I mean, I had originally started with FHA just for the homeowners, but then I realized, wow, these could do up to a fourplex. You only need 3.5 down. There are rules and stipulations of how to use it and all that. So you do want to find a lender who started out using FHA. But again, to preface prior, we want somebody who gets all the investor acronyms and what they mean, and not only what they mean, just like the definition, but how to use them and have that conversation. So it does take a more in-depth conversation it can't just be a couple of questions, but those are starter questions we mentioned before on how to get that conversation going. The FHA program is something I've been looking for a while, and it's one of the last programs that are available right now to get started in small multifamily units with very little money. So I'm always keen on that. Unless you're a veteran, you can do zero down, but that's very, you know, not everyone's a veteran. So
got it. All right. Well, they've got your information in the show notes. So if they want to also reach out to you, how best would one of the listeners get a hold of you?
Sure. Again, my name is Albert Bowie, Avenue One Capital, and the number is 949-514-5106 for my California folks, and for Washington, 425-951-5300.
Great. And I also have your email there in the show notes if they want to send you an email.
Perfect.
So, Albert, hey, thanks for coming on today. I think this is going to be really enlightening for the listeners to learn about mortgage products and what their options are, so they don't necessarily feel like this is a dead end. And I've seen too many real estate investors go down that road where the property is being foreclosed. And I just talked to someone yesterday, yes, hard money lender, yeah, got into them. They couldn't get the project done in time, and they ended up giving it back to the hard money lender. But you don't have to have information. Become an informed investor is what I could tell people.
Definitely. I agree.
All right, sir. Well, thank you for coming on again, and hopefully we'll be talking to you soon.
Appreciate having me. Thanks,
Clint. All right, Albert.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.